you're listening to CITR. This is Vanessa Brown speaking. I have an exciting hour coming up for us. Fax, local band, is going to come in for an interview. They just released their first full-length feature album called Like a Living Being. But for now, we're going to start off the hour with Paul Kochburner's Buxig Liza.
Thank you.
And that was Buchsigleise by Paul Kalkbrenner. Something a bit interesting about Buchsigleise is that Buchsig refers to Boxy. That's a Platz or a square in Friedrichshain, Berlin. Friedrichshain is the historically working class / party district in Berlin. And Leise means silent, so I love that track, and I love how kind of calming but uplifting it is, and I love the imagery of the kind of quiet square where there's usually a bit of a party and a kerfuffle going on. Up next we have Metronomy with The Look. I'll be right back.
Your UBC pride. The UBC bookstore has a massive selection of official UBC and Thunderbird clothing and backpacks, 100% sweatshop free. They also have a dazzling array of accessories and giftware and proudly sell Tom's shoes. Located at the corner of East Mall and University Boulevard, UBC Bookstore, where your purchases support UBC Campus.
This music, reggae music, is tell the whole world, you know. Telepathically and physically and mentally and spiritually, we are telling them to this music, yeah.
So you heard it here at Rocker Show 101.9 FM CITR. Featuring yours truly, George Beard, keeping the reggae music alive on the west coast of Canada. It's all about roots rock, lovers rock, dancehall, reggae music. On CITR Rocker Show, Sunday noon to 3 p.m. each and every Sunday.
The love of Jack.
For over 25 years of doing it nice, warm, and easy. Until next time, such time, keep the faith and spread it gently. Jah bless and Jah guidance. Jah out.
I'm looking at me.
Bless out.
Your mind on the rhythm and no wine in a ace. Glad I'm up here in a rubber dump place. Dance out.
Good morning, and you're listening to CITR. This is Vanessa Brown. I'm very happy to be here today. We were just listening to The Look by Metronome. Next up, we have Always Malaise by Interpol. And coming in a few minutes, we also have Facts in studio for an interview and for some guest selection and for a little bit of music playing. So stay tuned because I'm super excited about it. All right, here we go.
You need me, lover. I want to give you a number.
No.
Good morning. You're listening to CITR. This is Vanessa Brown. We just listened to back-to-back tracks by El Perro del Mar. The first one was This Loneliness, and the one that you just heard was From the Valley to the Stars. I am very excited because we have two members of the band Facts here today. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Tired. We're good.
Okay.
The show is early.
I know. I was just saying to these guys that asking musicians to come in so early in the morning is like asking vampires to roll out of their caskets and meet you at the beach.
Yeah.
So I definitely appreciate you guys being here.
It's generally around bedtime for us.
Yeah. So who are you and what do you play in the band?
I'm Sean. It's going to get confusing in a second. I am Sean and I play keyboards.
Well, I'm Sean and I play guitar and I do vocals.
Welcome, you guys. So, I noticed that you guys have a lot of stuff going on this weekend. What kind of things do you have coming up?
You just caught us right before the whirlwind, actually. Like, this is like our last day, essentially. This is like D-Day for us. And this is good for us because it made us get up early to get all the things done that we need to get done. Because tonight we're playing a show at 560. Downtown, we're opening for Yes Nice and playing with the Ruffled Feathers. That's being put on by Winnie Cooper. And that's going to be a really awesome show we're playing. We're opening that up, but like right after that, we're heading off to Live at Squamish for the weekend. We're going to be playing on the Saturday at 4 o'clock on the Meadow Stage, and we're just about to end it. Right after that is like so much of extra stuff, so it's like our last day to get everything ready because we're not going to have any other time to do anything else. Because right after Squamish is done, we're straight off to Peak Performance Boot Camp for a week. And then right after that's done, we're on tour to Toronto and back for 3 weeks.
Insanity. That's awesome. Tell listeners a bit about the Peak Performance. I wanted to ask you guys about that. How's it going? What is the Peak Performance and how's it going for you so far?
It's a lot of stuff. It's really good. Like I've been in sort of typical Battle of the Bands competitions before, and this doesn't have that feel at all. Like this seems very, I don't know, like very positive, very like everyone seems like they're working towards a common goal and working towards, you know, educating people, like educating musicians about how the business works. Along with that, there's a huge amount of just tasks and projects that we have to do. Like we have to create a social media campaign. We have to do a fundraiser. We have to come up with merchandise ideas. We have to submit business proposals. Like all the sort of stuff that as a musician you never really want to think about,
right?
Because you just want to play music. But as a as someone trying to make a living, it's super important to know how to do this.
So it basically has a lot to do with like the professionalism of becoming a band, and
it's how to live like a professional musician. It's just you're practicing all the things that essentially are how you're supposed to make money and how you're supposed to make a living doing it, which is all the things you don't know how to do when you start off. And it's just sort of breaking that comfort zone and getting out there and just doing it for the first time and realizing, wow, if I did this all the time, I could see how that would be extremely beneficial to me.
Right. And for people who don't really know what the Peak Performance is, how would you guys describe it? Like, what does it do? And is it a competition? How do they select a winner?
Yeah, I guess it's sort of like half a competition and half an artist development program. I mean, the competition part of it is actually really huge because the grand prize for it is $100,000, which is, you know, a pretty, pretty big amount of money. Anyway, so as we go through it, like there are all these different tasks that we get rated on and that we get marked on, and you know, hopefully at the end of it, we'll have a really high mark.
That's awesome. So it's a bit of Battle of the Bands and a bit of Battle of the Brands.
To an extent.
It's a good way to
put it.
So I'm going to be greedy and I'm going to start us off with, I know that you guys have brought in music to play, but I'm going to actually play one of your songs first to initiate our get together. Are you guys okay with that?
I guess so.
All right. I'm going to be playing Colorful Box. And this is from Like a Living Being. Thank you.
you're young. Stepping over cigarettes, cherry-flavored glass, I brought you to perfection. I spun around and left before the shivering had passed. Is it good to be held? A rebel. Life. Things are bound to come to me. That's because I smile a lot. That's because I'm hot.
In the warm, sticky air.
And you're listening to CITR. This is Vanessa Brown. We were just listening to Colorful Box by Facts, and I'm very excited to have Facts here with me in the studio. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Just 1 second. Sorry about that. I just had a minor technical difficulty. Anyway, I'm really happy to have Facts here. I asked them to bring in some music, and they've brought in Sarah Elliott, who plays a song, Graveyard. And I just was hoping that maybe you guys could talk a little bit about how you guys came together as a band and what some of your musical influences are, and maybe whether it relates to this song or not.
Yeah, that's essentially why we wanted to play the song. Sarah is actually a friend of ours. From a few years back, we met her just doing shows in Vancouver. She's a musician herself, and she, like 2 or 3 years ago, asked me to actually record a bunch of music for her. And she would come over to my house, and we would record all the stuff just in my bedroom. And it turned out to be one of the best projects I ever did. And I got really inspired from the music she was making. And she did everything super DIY. She did everything with just her guitar, her voice, and she had this drum machine that her dad gave her. It was like right out of like an 80s movie or something. It was like this big colorful thing. It was called the Korg Rhythm 55, and it was so 1980s, the thing itself.
That's
and
awesome.
The drums it had on it were actually really awesome. I loved it, and it was just, the thing was such a kickstarter for making music, because you would just press it and it would just start playing all these weird disco beats and stuff like that. And you could just knock it, turn it on, and just start playing to it. And she wrote all these songs just using this thing. And I was just kind of amazed at her, the level of originality she was able to put together by using just this simple drum machine. And anyway, we did this record, and she moved to Toronto, and I don't see her much anymore. But after we did this, right around the time we finished recording this song, the band had sort of reformed. We used to be called the Armadillotons. We were like an indie punk band,
mm-hmm.
and we had to change our drummer essentially. So eventually, our drummer left, and it was down to the three of us that are still in Facts: me, Sean here, and our bass player Hugh. We basically just started playing without a drummer, and we're like, well, what do we do? Sarah ended up giving me that drum machine as a gift because she couldn't pay me for recording her record.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah. So I took this drum machine, and we just start setting it up in practice because we didn't even have a drummer to play with. And we're like, oh, this is just a temporary fix. And then the stuff we started doing, we liked so much. It forced us to change everything we did. It forced us to play at specific tempos and to think about dance music and that kind of thing, which we really loved. And it just sort of like 2 or 3 songs. The song you just played, Colorful Box, came from like a break beat we found on the Rhythm 55. That's actually the drum machine you hear in the recording.
Okay, so are some of your songs built around the drum kit then?
Around the drum machine. There's live drums and sampled beats from like old school drum machines. So they're sort of melded together. And so, yeah, just this drum machine forced us to do these things and figure things out. And then we got a drummer, we still kept the drum machine going.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's super cool. I actually have a question that kind of relates to that, because I've definitely heard that like a lot of your live performances are very sort of work as a collective, or it's more collaborative, and that there's not just necessarily one musician that takes the lead. And I was wondering with your songwriting, whether that's if you build songs the same way you perform, or whether there's some one particular person that tends to take leadership, or how does the process around that?
That's a hard question for us.
Yeah, it's kind of different from case to case. I think the idea of a collective is kind of true in our band, because we have like everyone in the band is a really talented musician and really, really creative, and also really passionate about their ideas. So we'll have, like, we've had songs, like, for example, Colorful Box. That was a song that I think started out of a jam that we just started playing one day and kind of fooling around with ideas, and was like, oh, hey, this is cool. Let's see what happens. And then Hugh came in a couple weeks later and had some lyrics figured out for it. And that one was just sort of like a process of melding it everything together. And then there's other cases where songs like Retro Oceans was something that Sean Bletcher brought in, mostly like pretty much figured out, and then it was up to everyone else to kind of flesh out our own parts.
Right. Yeah. I've noticed like on Colorful Box and also like Diagonals, it sounds like the music, it's like a traveling soundscape. Like it's sort of you're building different kind of song textures. And kind of the listener will move through. And then there's other songs like Cold or Retro Oceans where you can kind of feel there's like a structure in place the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm guessing that might relate to how you guys
kind of relates to who sort of input the idea. I think Sean's very much the soundscape guy I find in the band. He wrote Diagonals and he came up with the like very integral ideas to Colorful Box, so it has that sort of traveling feeling across it, and they're more jammed out songs for sure, where they just go with that feel, whereas you're right, Cold and Retro Oceans were more of a something where Cold was Hugh sitting down and working on a song himself and creating a structure,
right,
and then bringing it in, and it's the same thing with Retro Oceans, so you can kind of just get case by case with it, essentially, just because when you have that many writers in the band, that's just what happens.
But that's pretty great that you have so many writers in the band. I'm sure maybe it's difficult at times,
yeah,
too.
But it goes either way, honestly, because sometimes it's awesome and you get lots of flavor and lots of variety. But like the songs, like Colorful Box, when they're grouped together, those songs take a long time. Like Retro Oceans maybe took 2 days.
Wow. Okay, that's
entirely crazy.
It's crazy because as a first album, it's such a clean album in a way, but mm-hmm. it's not boring. It's not the same sound over and over again, where automatically you're instantly identifiable by any track on the album. That's your staple. But at the same time, I find that it's like a really sophisticated first album because there's so much packed into it.
Thank you. Like it was probably honestly more scattered before it was recorded. It's just kind of everywhere. And we owe a lot to the people we work with, the people we know. When I basically a long-term friend of mine, Tom Dobransky, who's from the Zolas, I've worked with him for a long time and I've always wanted to do records with him.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to do this with him, and I brought it to him because I knew he would take that scattered feeling and still keep some variety, but he would meld it together and give it some sort of purpose and make it feel like one record. And the guy who mixed it, Sean Cole, also helped with that. And they basically helped us give our songs like a solid foundation to work with. And once we did that in the studio, the studio was a big realization for us, like realizing, because we didn't know what we wanted to sound like or how we were going to sound. Like, this whole record is us figuring out what we wanted to do, because
okay.
we never had an idea from the beginning. And so this is for us is just feeling things out and putting it together.
And like honing maybe more of a vision in a way, like
yeah.
while keeping all that
yeah.
sort of experimental.
At the end of it,
stuff.
We were just like, oh yeah, like it's... It's like, oh, that's what we're trying to do.
That's
and
awesome.
Yeah.
But that's great. I mean, it's kind of nice in a way, rather than being totally, like, I'm sure that to an extent you have to be fairly strategic right now with mm-hmm. the peak performance and what you want to be and where mm-hmm. you want to be. But it's also mm-hmm. nice that out of something that was more experimental and more about just playing, mm-hmm. that something kind of solid was able to form out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could, I could definitely feel it sort of congealing as we went along.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think, I don't know, I'm probably not alone with this, but I definitely had lots of moments as we were recording where I was just like, what are we doing? What's the purpose of this? What does this album mean? And then as it went on, it you know, because of, you know, just spending so much time with it and also being able to work with really fantastic people who were great at, you know, pointing us in the right direction, it definitely did feel like it started to, I don't know, take on a little bit more significance as it went along.
Right. But I'm sure those questions are good. I think those questions are really important for, like, any musician or artist to actually have to confront, like, what is it that I'm doing? And, like, where am I going? Or what do I want to do? And also to be confused in that process as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to play Sarah Elliott, Graveyard, and we'll be right back.
To leave you, have a graveyard. means to many different people. The best definition of jazz that I know of is the jazz show on CITR with yours truly, Gavin Walker. Monday nights, 9 to midnight, with the jazz feature at 11 o'clock. Check us out every Monday.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts downtown at
212 Productions, Beach Street Records, Blim, Dream Apparel, The Fall Tattooing, The Kiss Store, Heart and Soul Clothing Inc., Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematheque, Scratch Records, Vinyl Records, Woo Vintage Clothing, and Zoo Shop.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
You're listening to CITR. This is Vanessa Brown speaking. I have facts here in the studio live, and I have something a bit special coming up. I asked the band to do a little piece of homework for coming in for the interview, and I asked them if they would bring in a piece of classical music, and my response was that, or their response was that they would not just bring a piece, but that Sean, in fact, would play one. So, hey, Sean.
Hello.
Could I get you to tell me a little bit about your performance history and what your background as a musician is like?
Yeah, so my dad's a piano teacher, so I basically grew up in a piano studio. I was about three or so years old when I started playing piano. I thought that everyone played piano because I spent all my time in my dad's studio. So, but you know, I really loved playing music, and I have basically been doing it my entire life. You know, did tons and tons and tons of classical piano competitions and exams and all that sort of stuff growing up as a kid. And then I actually came to UBC and I did my bachelor's in piano performance in classical music. And then I did my master's in classical piano performance down in Texas. And then I came back and kind of didn't do, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say I don't do classical music anymore, because I do, but since then I've really branched out into a whole bunch of different genres of music that I didn't really explore when I was younger. So, I now play in bands, and I play for musical theater companies, and I play in a jazz band as well. And that's actually one of the songs that I'm going to, or the song that I'm going to play today.
So what are you playing, and why have you chosen this song?
Well, the song that I'm playing is actually kind of a jazz classical hybrid. It's actually a piano transcription of an Oscar Peterson song that he performed with Sarah Vaughan. And my sister is a fantastic jazz singer and a burlesque performer in a group called Pandora and the Locksmiths, which is also another band that I play in. And she wanted to do this routine to this song, and you know, but she warned me, like, oh, so like printed music doesn't exist for it, so you're just gonna have to listen to it and figure it out. And I listened to it, and I don't know if you know Oscar Peterson, his stuff is kind of transcendentally difficult. and the fact that no printed music existed for it meant that I had to make my own for it. So, you know, I spent about 3 weeks loading the song into Logic, slowing it down like 400%, and trying to analyze every single note that he was playing. And after about 3 weeks, I came up with this. And then it took about another month or so to practice it and to actually be able to play it. I mean, the astounding thing is that Oscar Peterson improvised this.
That's bananas.
On the spot. And it's, you know, taken me quite a bit longer to get to that point.
So is this possibly the first transcription of an Oscar Peterson song?
There are other transcriptions. There's like an entire book that I found of some guy who did the same thing like years and years and years ago without, I don't know, like without the capabilities of being able to slow things down and to listen and analyze every note. I mean, that guy, I respect him and would never want to be around him because that's so much work to do. So no, this isn't the first one that has ever been done, but as far as I know, this is the only, like, I'm the only person who has ever transcribed this song. So minor props to myself.
Yay, all right, well, let's hear it.
Thank you.
Wow, I'm gonna clap. That was super amazing. What a treat. So we were just listening to a live performance of More Than You Know by Oscar Peterson, and that was by Sean Bantam.
Yep.
From Facts. You guys, it's been such a pleasure to have you here. We're out of time, so we'll have to end the program, but I just wanted to say thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's so great. And other Sean Fletcher, what song of yours are we going to close with?
You're about to hear a song. It's called, as one of the other CITR personalities put it, it's called Phew. So it's like phew, and me and a friend of mine one of my best friends in the world helped me write it on a Casio keyboard like a year ago. It's about carrying a canoe through the desert, and we wrote it, and then we turned it into a fax song.
So amazing. Cool. Well, next up we do have Sounds of the City with Ryan, and we are closing the show with Phew by Fax.